everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Bruce Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the founder and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. Well, thanks for everybody for hopefully y'all have caught the last couple of episodes. It's been fun doing this this interview series for what I'm now calling our extended off season, the longest off season. So it's been fun. We hope y'all are having fun with it. Just some things to get out of the way before we get started today. For those of you that enjoyed seeing the tweet along to Rice Athletics replay of the 2013 CUSA championship game last Saturday, stay tuned because we have some content related to that on this very episode. But they're doing that again this, I guess by the time this episode releases, it'll be tonight, Saturday the 4th. They're going to be replaying the championship game from the College World Series in 2003 when Rice won the national championship against Stanford. So Matt will be live tweeting from the Roost account for those of you that want to follow that again. So we'll get started. Today's guest is Taylor McCarg, who was the starting quarterback on that Rice Conference USA championship game in 2013. We're glad he's joining us tonight. Thanks for joining us, Taylor.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me on. This is fun.
And I guess we can jump right into the beginning of it. I wanted to start with actually a throwback to the last podcast we did. We had J.P. Heath, Voice of the Owls, on the show. And I don't know if you had the chance to listen to this or read up on it, Taylor, so to spring it on you. But we put together a Rice Mount Rushmore of the 2010s.
Okay. I did not see this. I'm sorry. Seen this yet, but
no, that's why it could be a good or a bad thing. So it okay. we got through the top three, and then we came to the fourth, and we were trying to decide between yourself and Sam McGuffey. And
I'm gonna say McGuffey edged me out.
He did.
Okay, that's probably what my vote would have been as well. So I think you got it right.
I want to start us out on that foot just to point that I'm not always right. But had I watched the championship game prior to recording that episode, maybe that would have emotionally pushed me in the other direction.
No, I think you guys got it right. Sam certainly had his impact on Rice as a player, but I think some of what he did after as well, I think I would argue that counts towards, you know, a legacy. And anytime you have a player that goes on to have any sort of Olympic career, I think that impacts any sort of list of that variety. So yeah, I would have chosen Sam as well.
Yeah, I confess I was the tie-breaking vote on that final pick, and my reasoning was that if it's going to be a Rice all-star team, if you will, then perhaps the all other things being equal, the tiebreaker should be the more unconventional pick. So I figured a transition from football to an Olympic bobsled career was just the sort of thing you'd be looking for.
Yeah, which I certainly did not do. So
the Riciest.
I'm not going to hold that against you guys.
All right, good. Well, I was going to air my dirty laundry out in the open before we get to that, and point y'all for all listening. Now you can go back and look at that and tell us how wrong we were or right. I think we got through what Carter, like 15 or 20 different people that were in the conversation. It was kind of fun going back and talking about all the recent greats that Rice has had.
No, it sounds like you guys got it right.
Well, mea culpa, and we'll move on to number 4/5. But the owner of something pretty special in Rice history, a football conference championship, which has not happened since or a long time, decades before that. So we wanted to jump in and kind of talk your time at Rice and that team. And I guess just starting with how special was that group of guys?
Yeah, that run, we had so many seniors. And I know during the live tweeting, obviously you guys talked about how much talent there was on the team, and we did put several guys in the NFL off of that team. But you had a lot of guys on that team that were seniors and even, you know, juniors that had played so much football, and guys that didn't have any sort of pro career but had so many reps and had played and, you know, appeared or started in 30 plus games. And we knew going into the season we were going to be pretty good. And the way the schedule fell, we didn't have, you know, on some of the years that I was there, we had a gauntlet of non-conference. But that year it actually lined up to where we knew we had a chance in every one of them. And even if you look at Johnny Manziel was suspended for the first half of the A&M game, we went in there thinking we're going to beat these guys. And we were either winning at half or it was close going into half. And then they pulled away in the second half, but we were in every game, save the bowl game. We won't talk about that, but, it was a fun year. We knew we had a lot of talent. And there was a stretch where I think we'd won 6 or 7 in a row, and that hadn't happened in I don't know how long. And it was just a fun year all around.
Yeah, obviously the season before that, which was my – so I actually, I believe, came into Rice at the same time as you did in the fall of 2009. And yeah. Y'all had the 2012 season had gotten to, I believe, 6-6 and then won the bowl game. So you were coming off the – first bowl game since 2008, best season in a little while. How did y'all feel that off season? Coming off a really solid season, did you feel like you really had a chance to push for a conference title and to have something really, really special coming into the 2013 season?
Yeah, we definitely did. When you go on a run like that and then cap it off with a bowl win, that gives everybody confidence. And then we looked at the pieces we had coming back, and I'll get the numbers wrong, but I think it was like 19 fifth year seniors were coming back and a total of 23 seniors overall. And we knew just on a number, just numbers alone, that we had a ton of talent coming back. We did lose Luke Wilson and Vance McDonald, who had a huge role in our offense before that. And so we were sort of wondering what we're going to do about the tight end position, but we had a freshman, Connor Sella, that stepped up. Jordan Taylor really had a big junior year, or really a sophomore year rather. And we knew in the offseason, you got into spring ball and realized we got a lot of pieces, and we were confident and knew that if we just take care of our business and stay healthy, that we had a good chance at conference the following year.
So you knew losing two NFL tight ends that you were still going to be able to move the football and do it pretty darn well.
Yeah, it helped that we had a receiver that ended up having a pro career. And we ran the ball really effectively and knew that, Charles Ross, who ended up being first team all conference, rushed for, I forget what it was now, but, 1,300 yards and a bunch of touchdowns. We knew that we were going to be able to run the ball. The question was, we did things with Vance and Luke that we knew we weren't going to be able to. We didn't have another Vance or Luke on the team, and that's no fault of their own. It's just, how often do you have two NFL tight ends? And so we had to adapt a little bit, but in that spring, going through spring drills, we realized, okay, our identity is going to be running the football and clock management, and we weren't going to go out and throw it 50 times a game. It was never going to be us. But we knew if we don't turn the ball over, we had a ton of talent coming back on defense. We had two corners that are still playing and Christian Covington in the middle. Mm-hmm. So we just knew we've got enough guys coming back. Just, we don't have to go score 50 a game. If you look at that 2008 team, they were in shootouts the whole year, and they had to go put up 35 plus points in a lot of those games, and they did it. We were not that team. We were not going to go score 50 points a game. We were going to try and not turn the ball over, control the clock. And we had a couple games that season that we blew teams out, but a lot of it was get out early, control the clock, and win by, 7-10 points. But the biggest thing that my fifth year when we won conference was we won all the close games, all the coin flip games, for the most part, we won those, which in the past, it was a possession here, a possession there that went the other way, and we lost them.
Yeah, I was looking back at that before that they re-aired that game on Saturday, looking back at y'all's schedule, and I think it was like it was at least 5 of your conference games were you won by a touchdown or less, I think, and a couple of them went to overtime, I think. So Yeah, what was that? I mean, what was that like being in that? I guess what is that mentality like when you're facing these close situations again and again and again, and to be able to come through each time? I mean, does that ultimately? I mean, because you talked about how many fifth year seniors were on that team. Does a lot of that just come down to experience and kind of the confidence that comes with that?
Sure. Yeah, it doesn't always have to, but for us, that's what it was. It was the confidence knowing we've done it before and we can do it again, but you've got to get a taste of it, because we had 2011, we go 4-8 that year. You go back and look, and there's four games on that schedule that were very winnable games. I mean, the 2011 team, that was a bowl team. It really was, and we lost four games by, you know, less than, a lot of it was one possession, a field goal, a turnover late. And over time, we started to win some of those. And then the back half of 2012, we won a few. And then by the time we got to 2013, we knew how to win those close games. And then you got one early in the year. Our defense played out of their minds against Florida Atlantic. And we won one that really we stole. I mean, we should have lost that game. And it gave us the confidence that, hey, we can do this. And then we went on a run and won a bunch in a row. And even late in the year, I mean, we played Tulane, and it was both really solid defenses, and there was not a lot of scoring. But we felt like the whole game, like, as long as we don't turn the ball over, we're going to be fine.
Yeah, and then pretty incredible to cap it off on, I guess, the conference championship itself. Like, getting to that game was incredible. But then you also had the opportunity to host it at Rice Stadium. Now, I know it was cold, but other than that, that week leading up to that, is that kind of overwhelming, I don't want to say swagger, but maybe that is what it is, that confidence kind of carrying over into when you stepped onto the field and actually got to, you know, hit somebody.
Yeah, it was the thing that I remember. So two things. Number one, we didn't think we were going to host. Marshall was the higher ranked team. Most of the metrics that you measure who's going to host, they were ahead of us. I still don't know how we got it. And so we get to host, and they are so angry. And they gave, I mean, there was so much bulletin board material, because their coaches were saying all this crazy stuff. All of their players were tweeting about how they were going to come down. This is ridiculous. They're going to come down, beat our, you know what, take the trophy, go back to West Virginia. And we were like, all right, well, I mean, we didn't think we were going to host either, but you guys are crazy if you think you're just going to walk in here and this is going to be you guys got a great offense, that's fine, but you're crazy if you think you're going to walk in here and we're just going to roll over. So it made us angry, which was funny, because if we had gone up to West Virginia, I don't know if that edge that we had was going to be there, because we had extra motivation from them treating it like, you know, this is ridiculous. This is really just a lesser team, and we're going to walk all over these guys.
Yeah, I guess I always in my head thought back. I'm like, I remember that being a pretty good Marshall team. But actually, when they queued it up and we were doing the replay, and I was like, oh, yeah, that was Rakeem Cato. Like,
yep.
He's one of the best college quarterbacks of that era. He was, I mean, no offense, you beat him head to head. Y'all did really well. But
he had a pretty amazing career.
Yeah, no, he was one of those guys, like, you know, there's always somebody out there that decides they want to take up the cause for, like, a group of five quarterback who puts up, like, crazy rushing and passing stats to say, like, this guy should be at the Heisman ceremony. Like, I don't know if you remember Jordan Lynch when he was at he was in Northern Illinois. And Cato was one of those guys that was just like, every week you'd look at the numbers and be like, holy, he did what?
Which kind of just adds to the satisfaction.
Yeah, absolutely. They had a couple guys on that team in skill positions that played in the league a little bit. They threw it all over the place. And you watched it. We jumped on them early, and I think put the doubt in their head. And they didn't play very well through most of the first half. They had a lot of drops. They were real sloppy, and we were dialed in. And it just, there's a lot of things that you go back and look at it. A lot of things really went our way. I mean, the the play to Jordan Taylor, the real long touchdown, that was supposed to go to Klein Kubiak. The whole week we practiced it. We got the coverage pre-snap. We got exactly what we wanted to go to Klein. And at the snap, they roll coverage and they turn Jordan loose and they take the route away from Klein. We hadn't really, I mean, we knew obviously Jordan's going up the seam, but we hadn't practiced it because we weren't running it for that look. And he comes open, and that was just one of those plays. It was sort of a bang bang play that goes our way that we didn't call that play for a, you know, you never really call it. There's not a 75 yard touchdown play, right? But
you don't have that in your arsenal.
That one, that was supposed to be a 10 yard out to Klein, you know, pick up a first down, keep the chains moving, and it turns into a long touchdown. So it's things like that, you know. Luke Turner, 2 touchdown passes in that game. He played out of his mind. And going back and watching it, I just remembered all of these things that really went our way in that game, coupled with they really weren't playing very well in the first half.
That play to Jordan, I didn't remember what it looked like off the top of my head, so I can't remember maybe what the concept was, but was he even like in the progressions for you, or did you just, you know, you saw they took away the read decline and you just saw that he was running free up the seam?
Yeah, it was more of an outside in read, and you look at the whole week, it was more if Jordan just comes scot free, throw it to him. Otherwise, we're running this to try and, because this is no offense to Klein, but Jordan got a ton of attention. And so we knew if we have him run a vertical, take the top off,
yeah,
Klein is coming in behind it, there should be a pocket there. That's really the void in the coverage.
Yeah, like a clear out route.
Right. But the way that they rolled down, they rolled a safety down. And when they did that, they just went to man free. And Jordan, we didn't get man free much for Jordan because he just would run by people. Or in a 50-50 situation, we just put it up. And he ran right by him. And it was like, I can't believe that you guys did that, but it worked for us.
Yeah, and then you mentioned at one point the 2 touchdowns that weren't thrown by you. I know in the modern era, I guess I don't even know what that encompasses really, but I guess last 10 years the popular convention is, you know, if you have 2 quarterbacks, you don't have one. But through watching that game, what y'all were able to do that season, it almost looked like you were just as locked in when you got back on the field. No, was it kind of just the offense flow, and how did that work, being able to take yourself out and then come back in and just stay just as locked in?
Yeah. From the time that I got there, we had the Wildcat package. I mean, the time I started playing 2010, we had Jeremy Eddington running it, and some games we featured it a ton. Some games they had an answer for it and we didn't use it at all. And other games, the offense, just as it was with me, was rolling fine, but it was always used sort of as a spark plug. If there was a couple of drives back-to-back in the first half of that game that we go on a run, we get a bunch of points, we score a bunch of points quick, and then it sort of we stall a little bit. And it was always answered. That was always our answer, to try and just mix up looks a little bit. Now, the first touchdown to Luke that Luke threw was just a trick play, right? It was an option pass to Dante. But then later on in the game, we realized on first down, we're getting quite a bit of push with our Wildcat package in the game. The only time I ever had a problem with it was when we didn't get, if we got a yard on first down, I didn't like when they would stay in the game, candidly, because then if now you're banking on, okay, it's 2nd and 9 or 2nd and 10, if we don't pick up a good 5 yards, I'm coming back in after sitting out 2 plays, and they're bringing in the quarterback who actually throws, and it's 3rd and 7. And you're like, okay, that is when the flow was sort of taken out. But most of the time, Coach Reagan, our offensive coordinator, was pretty good about, if we didn't pick up, you know, solid yards on first down, I would come back in for 2nd down. But I had just gotten so used to it that you do your best to stay in a rhythm. I mean, they're very rarely did the Wildcat stay in for a whole drive, you know?
Yeah. And that seemed to be what was going throughout that game. I think there's a sequence in the, I'm trying to remember, maybe mid third quarter, into third quarter, where it was you and then Luke and then you, and then Luke, and then you again, like alternating play to play, it almost looked like. But I mean, it worked, right?
Yeah, one of those games you were talking about that went to overtime, we played UAB, and we get down to like the 2 yard line, and they swap me out for Luke, and they run option with Luke, and we score and win the game. And I'd be lying to you if I would tell you that I didn't want to be the guy scoring on the walk-off touchdown, but it worked, and you're never going to complain about a win. And that's just, that's how it was. We had it was on a game by game basis. I mean, we had some that we didn't use it hardly at all, but it really just depended.
They didn't ever drop like a Philly special for you to catch a touchdown out of that Wildcat package.
We had one. They did a throwback against Louisiana Tech. And the more I think about it, this was one of the dumber calls. We had it with Charles Ross throwing it. And Charles can throw fine, but we've got a guy that was a high school quarterback, and as you see in the game, can actually spin it. But we run it with Charles, and Charles throws it over my head. It's a lateral, and I have to chase this guy down from Louisiana Tech who's about to recover the ball, and I don't even get the ball. I just hit him. We both fly out of bounds. The ball rolls out of bounds. It's considered a fumble, and we lose like 7 yards. But after that, my receiver career was retired.
And then I want to go back to a little fun moment on Twitter that we had watching the game. That your receiving career was retired, but your punting career did live on and had some life. For those following our live tweeting, it was a bit between you and James Faramond about who is the better punter, because you booted a pretty good one midway through that championship game. He has challenged you to a punt off. Is that something that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I don't know. He would probably take me now. But I will say, if you go back and look, I think that this is right. I'm pretty sure that year I had more punts inside the 10 than he did. I think I had like 5. We did quick kick all the time. I mean, if we were at midfield and it was 4th and 3, we'd stay on and run quick kick. We did it all the time. And he would get so angry. So James, when you're listening,
I'm gonna have
don't
to go.
Forget, I had more
it said the internet machine did say that you had 4 punts that year. So we'll have to see. The year before.
Maybe it was the year before. But I do know that I had quite a few inside the 10 that he did not appreciate.
Maybe the only time a punter has ever been mad about a quarterback stealing his glory.
That's right.
That was a fun little exchange. And then after that, of course, they had the if y'all have ever been to the Texans game, they do like the fan appreciation afterwards. And if you take some folks down and let you kick field goals and take pictures on the logo and whatnot. I posted a self-deprecating video back to James afterwards of me attempting, I think it was like a 15-yard field goal, something like that. But the end of the kick is obscured by a banner, so there's no official documentation to whether or not that went through. We'll say that it did.
We'll say that it did.
The less that is ever said or thought about me ever trying to kick any form of ball ever is for the betterment of everyone involved. So no judgment.
This is why we sit on the podcast and Taylor and James go win championships.
Yeah,
it's a better combination that way. And then, man, there was so much good from that. And then I guess if we want to spin it a little bit forward. Just a little bit away from my lack of kicking ability, the program as a whole, and we were getting into this a little bit before we hit record, but of course we had the y'all's 2013 championship game, and then the 2014 team was pretty good as well, but it's been kind of in a lull and now back into the rebuild of the building process to get back to that point. I just kind of wanted to touch base with you and see what your relationship has been like guess with the program through the years, the transition from Coach Bailiff to Coach Blomgren, and kind of get your thoughts on how that progression is going and what you see for Rice football right now, kind of as an insider outsider, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah, I think Coach Blomgren, when he came in, it's important for people to realize when Coach Blomgren came in, so many of the guys that were supposed to be his leadership on the team, you know, juniors and seniors, so many of those guys left that he was working with. I mean, the roster was pretty thin when he got there. And that happens everywhere. That's not exclusive to Rice. I mean, you look at any time there's a regime change, kids leave. They take that opportunity to transfer. Sometimes they're young, but a lot of times it's the fifth-year seniors that they don't want to spend their last year with a first-year head coach. And typically, those teams are not very good. And so it's really been ground up. And I think you have that coupled with completely changing the scheme away from, we didn't exactly throw it all over the place, but we also were in shotgun every play. And you're recruiting a little bit of a different type of kid. And not all, on every position, but a lot of them are a different type of athlete. Quarterback, for example, I would not have gotten recruited for this offense. I was brought in because I ran the ball. And so much of what they do now is more pro style under center. Not that they don't use mobile quarterbacks, but it's just different. And we're going into year three for Coach Blomgren. He's got so much of their production coming back that, and finally a schedule coming up that favors us a little bit more. I think this should be a bowl team, but just like it was, you know, when I got there, we went 0-9, I redshirted, 10-11. We struggled. We went 2-10, 4-8, 4-8. And it takes just a little bit of momentum to get a program that's been struggling for a while over that hump. And you need it early. And that's one of the hard parts with the non-conference schedules we typically play is you get this stretch of games that beat you up and you come out of it, you know, 1-3, sometimes 0-4. And it's hard. But I would say there's a lot of promise right now. I was down there for practice before all the, you know, everything got shut down for spring ball, and we got a lot of talent. You know, we passed the eye test, and now it's just getting over that hump and you know, implementing all the things that Bloom's staff has brought in. And in year three, that's, you know, you'd like to see obviously us get to a bowl game at a minimum.
Yeah, and I know that's absolutely the coaching staff is not shied away from when they are talking to the team or talking to potential recruits like that. That's the expectation for this year. And then an interesting point that you hit on with the non-conference schedule. I think last year's schedule, I mean, obviously it was brutal. When if Army is the easy team that you're playing in non-conference, that's, I mean, you can't, no, not many teams can schedule a non-conference that difficult, but it'll be nice this year to throw in. I mean, no offense to Lamar, but the Lamar Cardinals are not the Stanford Cardinal. Like that's a different caliber of football team. And then I've heard it, you know, in the moment from players on the team today, like when they went to play Texas. But from your perspective, like you mentioned playing A&M, is there when you're looking at that on the schedule, like obviously like a lot of like LSU, Texas, Texas A&M, you have friends and peers that were recruited by and you know, you're playing against. So there's that rivalry factor. But at some point, is it kind of like, I wish we wouldn't play LSU and we would play Louisiana Monroe every year? Or what's the balance there as an athlete?
It's you're never going to get a straight answer when you ask somebody that's still in the thick of it, because number one, they're competitors, and they, regardless of what they may actually think, they're going to tell you, you know, we can go out and beat these guys. But there's a reason that it leads off, you know, College Game Day final when an LSU loses to a Rice, right? Because it doesn't happen that often. And when you, my sophomore year, 2011, we played Baylor with RG3, we played Texas, we played Northwestern and Purdue. That was our non-conference. We beat Purdue. We go 1-3.
Yeah, we did. That was a great game.
We're completely beat up. And but we considered it a huge win that we go 1-3 through that stretch. And that's not ideal for coming out of non-conference. You want to have a balance. Those big money games are important to Rice. It's no secret. It's important to all the smaller, you know, sort of group of five schools. They need those games against the Ohio States, the Texas, the LSUs of the world, because they fund a lot of the athletic department's budget. It just is what it is. But having four of them is not ideal. And so, like you said, you want to have, you know, a service academy. You want to have another group of five. If you can get an FCS school in there as well, that's also ideal. And you'd like to come out of non-conference at a minimum, you know, 2-2, because then four wins in conference is the bowl game is obviously is sort of the minimum expectation. And if you can go 2-2 in non-conference, you should be in a pretty good position to get to that goal every year.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough situation when you're in the hole where, you know, you come out of non-conference and you have to get five or even six wins in conference to give yourself a shot at the bowl. So I personally think this year's Rice non-conference schedule is about as ideal as you could possibly be, right? You have like an LSU, like a paycheck game, for lack of a better word, because you do need that money in the budget. You have the Bayou bucket, which is, you know, very important. And it's good that we're getting that going again since UH moved out of conference. But then you have, I blanked. Are they playing Army again? They're playing Army, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That's so you have a winnable game against, you know, either a group of five, another group of five team or a service academy. And then you have like one of the nearby Texas FCS schools in Lamar. And I think that is exactly the balance you want to give yourself, because like you give yourself a very good shot at coming out of conference 2-2 or even 3-1, or coming into conference play 2-2 or 3-1. And yeah, that sets you up a lot better while kind of still hitting all of the bases that you want to hit in non-conference play.
Yeah. And we don't leave we don't leave Houston until October. All four of our non-conference games are in Houston because LSU is playing at NRG,
mm-hmm.
which is, I mean, all of that's a big deal. Not having to travel, keep kids close. And like you said, these are winnable games. I mean, there's no reason that we can't go 3-1 through that stretch.
Oh, so we might lose one of the other ones, but we're beating LSU, right?
Exactly.
You heard it here first. Rouge Pod, we're calling a shot. I mean, at this point, it is, if the game, I mean, not to be dire, but even gets played, I know it at this point, and I know that you've kind of made the turn from player to media, and so maybe you can kind of give us a different perspective on this entire situation. But, and I know none of us actually knows what is going on to any degree, but with the shutdown and, of course, all spring sports and spring practice being canceled, there's rumblings that it might even trickle over into football season. Is there any point in your mind where that you've actually started to consider a world where we might not have at least a conventional football schedule for Rice in 2020?
Yeah, I think it's on. You know, everybody has considered it, I think, and when you see the final or the basketball tournament, March Madness, get canceled, from an NCAA perspective, then anything's on the table, right? I think the challenge that you look to the fall, and this is all speculation, and I'm the furthest thing from an expert on what's going on.
Say with a caveat COVID. Where none of us are medical doctors.
Right. So this is all speculation, but you got to imagine, okay, you're not going to have football unless schools are back in session physically, or there's a scenario where you're still in online classes, but we've gotten to a point where you can test these kids and you're playing, you're practicing and you're playing, but you're playing in empty stadiums. And I think these are all things that are on the table and people are considering, and it still would not shock me. I mean, Tom Herman just gave an interview in Austin, I believe last night, on this, and was talking about 2 weeks ago, he would have said never would have imagined the season being postponed or canceled, and now he thinks it is 50-50. And it's still probably too soon to tell. Obviously, I'm the last person that knows or can give any real insight. But like you said, I think it's certainly on the table that we see either a delayed start, a shortened season, or just no season altogether.
Which is wild. What would you put that? Maybe 2 months, 3 months. I wouldn't leave my house if that's what it would take to beat this and give us football back.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do. I mean, I will admit I'm not. This self-quarantining has made me realize how much I miss sports just in general. I mean, I don't typically watch a lot of NBA. I would take the worst NBA regular season matchup right now, and I'd watch it start to finish. I mean, no question. But for college football is the only thing you touched on it a little bit. I've gotten back into covering football a little bit because college football is the only thing I care about. I mean, it's the only sport that I really follow passionately. And if they take that away, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I just I can't even. Like it's like you said, it's very real at this point that's a possibility that you could postpone or modify or even cancel the season. And like logically, I know that's a possibility, but there's still a huge part of me that just can't really process what a fall without football, without sports, period, really looks like, and especially college football, because as our regular listeners know, I very much grew up with the sport. I'm from Birmingham. And so like, it's in my blood, man. Like, it's just something that has always been a constant to me, even, you know, just someone who's just been a fan all his life. Like, I have no idea what that looks like. And it's going to be weird as we get closer and closer to that point, and the decision point kind of has to come just to, I don't know. Like it's hard to even imagine, even knowing that it's a very real possibility right now.
Yeah, no, it is scary to think about for sure.
And obviously, all of us hope that we don't get there. But I felt at this point, if we're talking football and rice, that is something that needed to be discussed. And then I guess just kind of one of the coolest things that I enjoy about covering Rice and getting to do some of these interviews and sit down and talk with folks like you, Taylor, is getting caught up with, because we talk all the time about Rice. You can have that world class education and you can play big time college football. That's kind of Mike Bloomgren's, you know, sales pitch. I'm doing it for him. I heard it, can say it in my sleep at this point. But I enjoy getting to kind of pan out a little bit and see, you know. Yeah, you've stayed closer to football than some of your teammates certainly have. But just kind of give us a quick update for those who aren't following you on the day to day. You know, what does your world look like right now, and how can we pay attention and follow you for your Twitter arguments with punters and whatnot?
That's right. Well, I mean, my day job's pretty boring. I'm a commercial real estate broker in Austin with Aquila Commercial. That's my day job. But I got a chance last fall to jump in the booth and do a handful of sort of like SWAC and Southland Conference games on ESPN3 and as an analyst. And that's been sort of the new adventure that I'm really excited about. And, you know, we were talking about football being gone. As just a fan, I would miss it tremendously, but I'm also hopeful that we get a chance to have football, because I'm excited about getting a chance to call more games this fall. And that's really what, you know, I had Twitter through college. I had most social media through college, and then I got rid of it. And now I it's the best news source for what's going on in the world of sports. And so got it back. I have zero following. I'm pretty sure I'm just tweeting into the void a lot of times, but that's fine. And I enjoy it. I mean, I'm enjoying getting back, you know, and I had a chance to coach, but I didn't want to go that route, but this has been sort of a way to get back involved in the game. And, so that's really what, I mean, any social media activity you see is really geared towards broadcasting, not my day job, if you will.
Well, you especially Twitter, you as a college football fan, you need it. It's therapeutic to some degree.
Oh, there's no doubt. And it's therapeutic, but it also reminds me that there are people out there that are just like me. Because in my day to day, I mean, I don't know. I don't have anybody in my life that cares about college football at the level that I do. And I realize that sort of, you know, I'm the outlier there. But I go to Twitter and I'm like, oh, there's thousands of you. And
here's more of me.
You're all on here tweeting your opinions about the greatest, you know, whatever stadium or five football players or whatever, that most people, they're like, I don't care. That's not important to me.
Yeah, it's I definitely, you know, as those of you listening that follow me on Twitter will know, I am definitely have very online brain and am constantly tweeting about a whole lot of different random stuff. But it is really nice for exactly what you described, is when you have something that you're really interested in, really passionate about, and you don't kind of have anybody around you in person. Because I mean, like, I don't know, I love my wife, but she doesn't care about any sports at all, let alone college football. And like, you know, I love it specifically because it's that outlet I have to interact with people and just let those thoughts out that are constantly coming into my brain, because I'm, you know, I'm probably thinking about college football like 40% of any given day. That's and right. So it's a great outlet for just being able to get that out of your head when there's no one around you in person that has any interest at all in what you're saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so that is why I have the Twitter.
Where can we follow you at, Taylor?
At T McCarg 16.
There we go.
McCarg.
And then I will say, if following that, when I was telling my wife, because of course, you know, sports have been shut down. Y'all know this as well, if not more so than anybody. I was telling her, so they're gonna air a football game that happened 6 years ago, and I'm gonna tweet it like it's actually happening. And she said, and people will care. I mean, I don't blame her.
Them, the former quarterback and punter.
And it ended up on the show, and we had at least another good half hour to talk stuff. But if you ever need anybody to talk college football with you, we're here, and that's part of what we're doing during the, as you called it, the longest off season ever, Carter. We are here to provide sports for all who care to listen, even if that is just the former quarterback and the punter. We're gonna have to make sure James gets this. Maybe he can get him on and defend himself.
Yeah, absolutely. He'd be great on this also. But no, yeah, this has been fun, and obviously happy to come on anytime, talk ball this fall. You know, hopefully we have football to talk about. But you know, Rice related or otherwise, I'm always happy to come on.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
All right. Well, we will see y'all next week. We have at least one more interview set up, I think. So we're going to keep this going as long as we can. But we'll see y'all again. Thanks for listening. And Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.